Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, June 24th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brincy, the incubation specialist. Renzi has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brinsea.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. In just a couple of minutes, we'll welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. We've got a great topic for you today, and he'll be calling in a little bit earlier than usual. And as soon as I cover the stops on the book tour, we'll bring him on live, and then we'll go till about 1 p.m. today. 1 p.m. Is all the time I think he'll need to cover this topic. And he's also going to, there's a couple of things he wanted to cover last minute before regarding our last topic we had last time. He was on about heat stress for chickens and how to keep them cool. He'll do that first and then get on to our topic with trying to reduce the risk of coccidiosis regarding your bedding in your coop. So that'll be today's topic. So hopefully you have those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out and ready to take some notes from Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor and founder of First State Vet Supply. com. So, we're heading out tomorrow on the second quarter. We do a tour with Tractor Supply every quarter of the year, and this will be our second quarter tour, and really looking forward to it. It is the Power to the Poultry Chicken Whisperer Tour, sponsored by Tractor Supply, and we're going to be hitting the Carolinas this time, actually. Before it was Alabama and Florida, now it's North and South Carolina. On Wednesday night, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., we'll be in Anderson, South Carolina at the local Tractor Supply there. Thursday night, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., Easley, South Carolina, of course, at their local Tractor Supply in Easley. Friday night, we'll be up in Weaverville, North Carolina at the Weaverville Tractor Supply. That also is 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then Saturday, great, great, great event on Saturday. We'll be doing the live radio broadcast live on location from the Asheville, North Carolina Tractor Supply. They're in Asheville, North Carolina, 9 a.m. live broadcast of this radio show. And then from 10 to 12, the official two-hour event, just like the other stores, we will be having a Getting Started with Backyard Chickens workshop and book signing. And then we'll hit the road and head east towards Newton for a Sunday event. That's Sunday at the Newton, North Carolina Tractor Supply. Sunday's event will be from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., and we'll be looking forward to meeting all the great chicken lovers on this chicken tour as we spread the chicken love nationwide. So, gotta love it. And, of course, every event will include that Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop, which includes a little bit about everything regarding getting started keeping backyard chickens, and then, of course, a book signing. And, of course, Q&A, questions and answers. So definitely looking forward to that. But we'll be hitting the road tomorrow, of course, with the family, Jen, myself, Caleb, and Lily. And we're definitely looking forward to meeting a lot of our friends and fans and readers. Also, speaking of the book, I heard from my publisher, and any day now, it's scheduled to be released on July 1st. So that's coming up here in about a week. The Keeping It Chickens 2014 calendar. In fact, it is a, I believe it's a, trying to look it up. It's either, I think it's an 18-month, it's either a 16-month or an 18-month calendar officially produced and printed, not something that I'm printing off my home computer and my little printer in the living room, nothing that I'm going through VistaPrint for, but, you know, those really nice, big, professionally photographed, big, beautiful calendars, and I think it's called Keeping Chickens 2014, A Chicken Whisperer's Guide, and they're doing a calendar based on the book, and that also is going to be available. It's got some beautiful photographs in it. It's going to be done, should be released around July 1st, and it'll be available on Amazon, of course, just like our book. But just like our book, it'll also be in retail stores nationwide. It'll be probably Lowe's. They carry our book, Home Depot, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply, anybody, anywhere that carries the book, and even your calendar stores. So it's going to be a neat calendar. And I don't even know how much it's going to be. I have no idea. But it should be released around July 1st. And it'll be a great addition to the book, which is still selling like gangbusters, even this portion of the year. I'll be anxious to see here in October when I get an update every 6 months and for the previous 6 months. So in October, it's kind of weird, in October I should get a letter from the publisher telling us how many books I sold between January and June. So looking forward to that. The last 6 months of last year, as y'all know, close to 20,000 copies of the book were sold. Hallelujah. That's awesome. Spreading the chicken love. So we got this great calendar coming out here on July 1st. I didn't have really anything to do with it. I just got an email from the publisher one day about 6 months ago. Hey, we're doing a calendar, and we'll keep you posted as it gets closer. Nothing. No, I didn't have to do a thing. So I just received emails based on the update. So, but I haven't even seen it. They've sent me an electronic version, but I haven't actually physically gotten the calendar yet. So hopefully I'll get a few of those to give away here on the broadcast and on the tour when they are released. So looking forward to that. So, all right, let's head over to the phone lines right now. We've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, who's joining us, and he's going to kind of follow up or finish up, if you will, on last week's episode of heat-related emergencies and keeping our chickens cool in the summertime. A few little updates to that episode, and then we'll get started with kind of limiting ways we can limit the risk of coccidiosis by dealing with our bedding and our coop and in the run. So great topic. Get those Chicken Whisperer notebooks out, and let's go ahead and give a big welcome, Chicken Whisperer welcome, to Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Hey, Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. You wanted to finish up a couple of things that came to light regarding the heat issue we did last episode, and then we can get into reducing the risk of coccidiosis regarding our bedding.
Yeah, what I thought I would do, there's a heat wave coming here, at least on the parts of the East Coast and up into New England, and already here it's a little bit quarter after 12 or so, and we've already got 87 degrees outside, so it's getting hot, and it's very humid here today. As it was yesterday. So these are going to be trying times for birds, and from my perspective, from where I sit, you know, there is no excuse for losing birds to heat. There's just so many things you can do. So what I thought I'd do is just run down a laundry list of things that as reminders of what you can do if you haven't already done something. If you're doing something and it's not enough, you need to move on and do other things at the same time. It may take more than one type of intervention here to mitigate particular circumstances. So I thought I'd just run down through them, and then we can move on to the other topic about the coccidiosis and so on. If you can't do anything, get some air movement, for the birds. So that would be, these are not necessarily in any particular order. These are how I just thought of them as I was sitting around over the weekend doing a few other things, and I thought,
all right,
make a little laundry list of things here that just come to my mind. So if you can't do anything, certainly get the birds some air movement. Moving air will help them dissipate heat from their body, especially when they droop their wings and that kind of thing. So, you know, air movement certainly of value. The colder the water in this kind of a heat wave that's coming is probably going to last at least several days or more. The colder the water, the better. And one of the reasons that the cold water is better, they don't want to drink water as it gets up towards their body temperature. The closer it gets to their body temperature, the less likely they are to drink of it. And if they do drink of it at all, it'll certainly be a diminished amount. It will actually not help them to the greatest degree to dissipate their body heat because the water itself will be warm. One of the best ways to lower their core body temperature without immersing them in water is to give them cold water, because the cold water gets right down into to the body and will help the air sacs dissipate the heat from the bird's body. You can add some aspirin to the water. We talked about that last week, about 340 milligrams. It really doesn't matter. If you put more, that's fine. You're not going to hurt them. Aspirin is readily accepted and readily used and very safe for use in birds, but about 340 milligrams or so in a gallon of cool water. Sodium bicarbonate, about 4 grams to a gallon of water. Provide shade for the birds. If you don't have a yard that's got trees that are good enough for shade, any kind of lean-to where the birds can get out of direct sunlight, and that would be a great place to set up a fan, you know, where the birds, you don't have to have a fan that's going to blow the feathers off the bird. You just have to have a fan that's going to move some air. Think about it for yourself. If you're just standing around and it's hot and it's humid, it's one thing, but if all of a sudden a breeze kicks up, it makes a whole lot of difference about you wanting to stay outside and finish the gardening or whatever else. Same's going to be for them. You could, to do this today would be a little bit late, but make your own swamp cooler. I still have available and will have available those artist renderings of the one that you could make out of a cooler and a small pump and some copper line and a common household fan. And the fan could be really any fan. It really doesn't matter. This is kind of a critical thing because this will help dissipate their heat and help them from overheating. But if you're going to feed them extremely early in the morning and much, much later in the evening when the sun is starting to set and so on. And the reason for that is they won't be burning up the calories during the day and burning up a whole lot of excessive calories in this heat. And then as they burn the calories, they put off heat and making the situation worse. So we want to try to do that as well. Decrease the bird's activity, no grandchildren and stuff chasing them around the yard, no dogs, cats, whatever. Try to keep everybody calm, and the less activity the birds have, the cooler they're going to be. If they have access to a place where it's shaded and they can dig in the dirt, that's going to help dissipate the heat as well. We also talked last week about fogging the birds with a stream of water. You can get these nozzles that put out about a half a gallon of water per hour. The higher the water pressure, usually around 80 pounds of water pressure, which is, I think, pretty close to what street pressure is before it gets into your home if you have city water. But something like that will create an evaporating cooling effect and bring the birds' temperatures down. Vitamins, electrolytes in the water, no question about that. Just follow whatever the manufacturer says. If there's no directions on the bag that you're using, a quarter of a teaspoon should be just about fine for most of them. You can add ice. You can add ice packs, anything to the water to keep it warm, rather cool, rather, as long as you're going to, you know, if you're not going to be around to do it, the ice packs and those kinds of things, frozen water bottles, anything you can put in it to bring the temperature down to make it drinkable for the birds. If your birds are confined basically in a coop all day and don't have an opportunity to get outside and run around, you might want to consider putting a sprinkler on the roof. Low volume of water. We're not trying to flood the place. We're just trying to bring the temperature within the building down. Certainly windows or openings that are in direct sunlight, you might want to put up some sort of a barrier there to deflect the sunlight away. And you can use just about anything, but something that comes to mind that's relatively easy to get is a piece of burlap. Sometimes you have to get feed in burlap bags and or corn or whatever. You could use those to help you deflect the direct sunlight. Adding vitamin C to the water has been known to help lower the body temperature and make it more tolerable for them. If I were going to do this, I would get some ester C, which is a better vitamin C, healthier for the birds, and will still do the job. You could take some wet burlap and soak it in water and put a fan in front of that and create evaporative cooling effect for that. Some of these may sound a little crazy, but when you got birds that are close to being dead from or in very bad condition from the heat, nothing sounds stupid, and that kind of thing. Additional waterers. The more waterers you have out, the easier it is for birds to get around and get to it. The less activity they have to get to get to that water. Again, helping to lower their body temperature, and that kind of thing. And the last thing, review last week's show to go over all the different temperatures we talked about. The high end mortality is much. Much less tolerant than the cold. We talked about the normal range for a bird being 104, 105, 106, 107, but we talked about the upper end only being about 4 or 5 degrees more than that high end before mortality starts to set in. So I would go back and listen to last week's show, and if you need additional information, people can call me, email me, whatever they feel necessary to do. And I'll be glad to help anybody in any way, shape, or form that I can. So I think that at least gets us up to speed on something that's relevant right this minute, things that people can do. None of it will break the bank. Those that want the artist renderings, there's two of them for the swamp cooler deal that I have here. Just need to send me an email. We don't sell your email. We don't email you back with a bunch of nonsense. You'll just get the artist renderings of the two things. I think they're in a PDF form, so everybody should be able to do that one pretty easy. And that's at chickendr@firststatevetsupply.com. So that will take care of that portion of this. Moving on to the controlling coccidiosis. The way I got onto this was there were several people who over a period of time have had just terrible bouts with coccidiosis, and even some of the medications seem to not do quite the job that we expected them to do. So one thing I wanted to say about it right up front is that if you're not aware of the symptoms of coccidiosis, you need to learn what those symptoms are and imprint them on your forehead. And the reason I say that is that once these things get into full-blown cases of cocci with bloody droppings everywhere and mortality coming out the butt, it's hard to stop them. You're at that point where these birds are on the outer edge of their life. They start dying like flies. Maybe the majority of the people who listen to the show don't have these kinds of things, and thank God for that. But there are folks out there, and I've said this before on the show, people will call me, and they've been raising birds for a long period of time, and all of a sudden coccidiosis has taken over, and they don't understand why, and they don't understand how to fix it. And all of these things, and by the time they end up calling me, in most cases, not all, but in most cases, I've had people that hatch 700 birds were down to the last 40 or 50 birds, and that doesn't really have to happen. It's something that that can be can be mitigated and taken care of. And one of the problems with coccidiosis is we have a tendency to put all our eggs in one basket, so to speak. We wait for, we use the medicated feed, and we assume that everything is going to be okay just because we're using the medicated feed. So we put a lot of weight on that.
Doc, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I started yapping, and I yapped for like 2 minutes, and I said, I asked you a question or something, and just nothing happened. I looked down, and I was disconnected and had no clue.
Oh, so, okay. Now we moved away from the heat related stuff to the beginning of the coccidiosis control for bedding.
Okay. Yeah, I got all the way to the end when you wrapped up the heat, and I was making a few comments, and then I looked down and I was like, hey, wait, I'm not broadcasting. Something's going on. But I'm glad you moved on, took care, and took over. That's absolutely fine. And that's not a problem. I will reserve my comments for later if they become pertinent.
Okay. But at any rate, so we put a lot of weight on the medicated feed, and in more and more cases lately, it doesn't seem to be doing the job. The time to get on coccidiosis is immediately. The quicker you get on it, the quicker it gets solved, the less mortality you have, the less intestinal damage that you have. When you start seeing, really bloody droppings from particular birds, they're having some real, real serious problems, and trying to get it stopped and then hoping that this bird does not have permanent intestinal damage, which will slow its growth for the rest of its life and make it more difficult for the bird to carry on normally. Don't forget, when we talked about this before, and we talked about supplements and probiotics and all of this stuff, we talked about the fact that about 60-70% of the bird's immune cells lie within the intestinal tract. So you're doing damage to the immune system, besides doing more than likely permanent and irreparable damage to the intestine itself, which means that the nutrients that the bird needs to get out of that feed are not going to be absorbed as well. They'll be absorbed, but not as well, and the bird becomes a little bit less thrifty. They're not as, their feathers aren't as good as the one next to them that didn't have it, and the comb isn't as red, and they're just not as perky all the time as the other one because they're always trying to play catch up, and it's very, very difficult. So the time to do it is right off the bat. So right out of the box, when you start brooding chicks, that's where it starts. It doesn't start after you get them out of the brooder and you're putting them in a hen house or another facility or another coop or run or wherever you keep your birds. It starts right there in the brooder. So what we want to do is to try to get what we call litter management, okay? And I realize that most people are probably not going to do this, and there are probably some out there that will say after I get done with this that he's nuts, and that's okay. And that may be, sometimes I think I am. But in all seriousness, that's where it really starts, how you manage that litter for those babies and get them through that brooding period and out into a different environment makes all the difference in the world. Because what we're doing with medicated feed is we are trying to allow the bird to have a controlled amount of coccidiosis so that the bird will build some natural resistance to it as it goes on day after day. And this is by allowing through a low level of the coccidiostat, in most cases Ampryl, in the feed, that allows what we call leakage, a little bit of coccidiosis to be there without overwhelming the bird, and those oocysts that go into the litter are then re-ingested by the bird, and it gets recycled back through the bird, comes back out, another oocyst goes back in, comes back out, and constantly being exposed to those species of coccidia that are present in that brooder will allow that bird over time to build some immunity. Now, so why do we have these problems? Well, these other problems that come in from uncontrolled coccidiosis and stuff are those, some of the scenarios are not using a medicated feed, using a medicated feed and not paying attention. Resistance to the Amprolium by the species of coccidia that are in your flock. These are probably the three biggest things. The fourth thing is keeping too clean a brooder, okay? If you're constantly changing the litter in the brooder, you're removing those oocysts that these birds need to re-ingest, to build some more immunity to the species of coccidia that are present. So you're depriving them of that, and without rebuilding that that immunity on a daily basis, you allow coccidiosis then to start to take hold. And in some cases, you know, once it does, this can get pretty ugly. Mortality can be high, morbidity, which is birds that just stand around and are probably tomorrow's mortality or the day or so after, you know, bloody droppings and so on. You know, so it can get pretty nasty. So a couple things you can do in the brooder is to manage the brooder in such a fashion that we don't allow it to get too dry and we don't allow it to get too wet. Now, you might be thinking, well, how do we do this? Well, you can go online or you can go to some hardware stores, and they have a two-prong. Some places it's a four-prong, depending on how much money you want to spend, but they're relatively inexpensive, about $20 in that range. This measures the moisture in wood, and they're readily used to measure moisture in litter. Okay? And you're going to want to keep that top level of moisture somewhere between 25 and 35% moisture, which would be ideal. And that will allow those oocysts to be dropped into the litter, sporulate, and be ingested by the birds to build some immunity. Now, there's a number of ways you can do it. If it's too wet, you can add more litter to dry it up a little bit. Or you can take some birds out. The amount of birds that are in the brooder will determine whether the litter is going to be too wet or too dry. Too many birds in there, you'll have a preponderance of droppings in relation to the amount of litter, and the litter can't absorb all the moisture, so it gets kind of wet and gooey and whatever, and that creates a runaway type of a problem, because you have the heat of the birds, you have the heat of the brooder lamp, and you have that excessive moisture, and that's going to allow this coccidiosis to get out of control. You'll be able to keep it under control at the lower levels of moisture. Now, you get down under that 25%, let's say 15 to 20%, then it gets too dry, and the oocysts start dying. And when they start dying, the bird can't ingest the proper oocysts to maintain that immunity. So we run into a situation the other way. And the same thing there is to, you can add more birds to that brooder. Probably one of the things that I would do is to decrease the brooder space. In other words, if you've got let's just say for argument's sake, don't hold me to these numbers, but just so you can get an idea, you've got a brooder that's 3 or 4 feet in diameter and you've got 10 birds in there, you probably don't have a problem. It's way too big. You know, for the amount of birds. Now, you take that same brooder and you put 50 birds in there, the dynamics of the litter are definitely going to change. And you have to find that happy medium of what works for you and your birds. I know this sounds, you know, a little bit crazy and like overboard and everything else, but it's not. It's the way for those people. This is not for everybody. I'm not saying everybody needs to run out tomorrow, buy this thing, and start doing all this stuff. Can if you want. I think it's smart. But the idea behind it is, if coccidiosis has been a problem for you and you constantly lose birds to it every year, you need to start to learn to manage your litter within these brooders, because that's where it starts. That's where the immunity starts. No immunity there, and you're done. We see this lots of times. People will have no problem in a brooder, okay? And they'll put birds out on range, and all of a sudden we start seeing birds that have coccidiosis and that kind of thing. And part of that is because now the droppings are so spread out that the birds don't have access to their droppings. The immunity starts to fall off over a period of time, and then if they're re-exposed to it, okay, and there's not enough immunity there, they may end up coming down with it. So it's a fine balance that you want to try to achieve by controlling the moisture in the litter, and you want to start that in a brooder. And the same thing goes on in a environment where your grow out pen, wherever that may be, you want to do the same thing in that particular case. Really, for the most part, if you're managing things right between a combination of the right coccidiosis medication and the litter management, you should really never lose birds to coccidiosis. It shouldn't happen. Doesn't mean it won't. Things happen. Forget to do something, or you know, somebody spills some water over it, and you're out for the day, and you're not back, and you know, things happen. And don't forget, these birds are going to spread this around, pooping in their water. It just gets spread around so easily. And I was asked a question too about somebody that wanted to grow their birds and not have to medicate for coccidiosis and wanted to not use anything. Just kind of, in other words, how can I grow them in a sterile environment? Pretty hard. Even in research settings, they find it very, very difficult to keep birds that are supposed to be coccidiosis free of it, because it's so easily spread. We can go into it, probably a good time to go into it now. Rodents, humans, biggest spreader of almost every disease on the face of the earth. Inanimate objects, contaminated feeders and waters, contaminated feed bags, feed carts. Some people allow their dogs to come in with them. I know in the commercial industry, some people that do that too. They let the dogs pick up the dead birds and so on. And in the chicken house, well, they go from house to house to house. The dog doesn't go through any biosecurity, washing their feet or anything else. And it's so easily spread, picking up the manure on his feet and bringing it into the chicken coop next door and that kind of thing. Flies have been implicated, cockroaches. In commercial chicken houses, they have what they call a darkling beetle. They've been implicated in it. They crawl all over the place and eat the insulation out of the buildings and what have you. All of these things contribute to the spread of this. Here's another method for you. You have a flock that you've been treating for coccidiosis with Ampro, and you've got everything under control, and they're egg layers, and when they lay their eggs, it's been proven before that there are oocysts live on those eggs. Now, if you're incubating them and you're washing them, you're going to kill them off pretty quick. If you're just putting them in an incubator, they're going to die from the excessive heat. My point being, it can be spread very quickly, because then you pick them up, those oocysts, then they're on your hands. And then your hands go to the next bird you want to pick up or the next job that you're going to do. So it's extremely difficult to do that kind of thing. This is much, much, much better. There are some natural methods you can use to control coccidiosis. One that we've been having tremendous success with, and I'm just ecstatic about it, can't speak more highly about it at this point in time, is this oil of oregano. I have a commercial turkey farmer here who I gave him some of this stuff last year. I actually gave him quite a bit of it. He had a problem with blackhead in his turkeys, and been fighting it for years and years and years, and you know, using all kinds of medications and feed additives and so on, worming, trying to get rid of it that way, putting paper down first, not allowing them to have access to the litter beforehand, then taking the paper up, getting rid of it, and then just so labor-intensive, it's crazy. Just a few weeks ago, actually 3 weeks ago, he called me and said, you know, you got any more of that stuff? And I said, well, I'm out of it right now, waiting for it to come in. And he said, well, I'm going to go back and do it again. He said, I think it worked pretty well. So, and I've got other people that are sending me emails telling me how good it's working for them. Person, I've said this before, I got a person in my own club here that has used it and just, you know, did the job for me after using many, many antibiotics. So there are things you can do, from a more natural standpoint. But once the birds become infected, you're probably going to have to turn back to one of these medications. And then, in that case, I would probably pick Ampro, the least invasive of the bunch that are out there. So you're going to want to, in that brooder, avoid caked up litter. You're going to want to avoid litter that gets extremely wet. Those instances, I would just scoop out those particular sections, put fresh litter in, and leave the rest of it alone. I would manage that litter by getting myself a little meter and going around testing the litter and making sure. And I would adjust it with birds or adjust the size of the litter. If you're using one of those, if you're using one of those brooders that are made out of the cardboard that is a couple of feet tall or so, you can expand it and contract it as you see fit to help control the litter moisture, which will help control the oocysts in the litter. Now, I'm not sure if your standard everyday veterinarian who does dogs and cats will be able to take a litter sample, but you can also have litter samples done, and I would check with my extension agent and find out how your local laboratory would go about doing it. But they can also tell you what the oocyst load is in your litter, and that will give you an idea of how well you're managing that. If it's a crazy number that they give you back, then you might want to take some steps to get that number down to a more manageable level. But you, right off the bat, after birds are born and put in a brooder and stuff, you should start to see. I would do a litter check at 7 days to see where you were. I would do it at 14 and again at 21. If everything was okay at 21, I think I would just continue on with the program that I was on and manage that litter as best I could. So you should, by the second one, you should see a more significant increase in the amount of oocysts that they're getting. So it doesn't surprise me when somebody says, "Well, yeah, I took my bird's sample to the local vet, and he said they have coccidiosis." Well, my question would be, when he read it, were they too numerous to count, which is the very high end, or was he just seeing some oocysts or somewhere in between? So you have to take those results and with a little bit of a grain of salt, okay? You would expect to see coccidiosis, and you wouldn't, under these conditions, want the birds to be free of it. So that's one of the ways of controlling it there. Now, as far as out in your chicken run, it is my opinion that you're going to want to keep that managed as well. Again, not too wet, not too dry, which I understand is tough when it's outside and it's raining cats and dogs. But by the same token, no puddling water. A well-drained run is ideal. And whatever litter material you're using out there, some people are using sand, which may not be conducive to allowing the birds to have access to the oocysts because of the way the sand moves around. And I'm assuming, and this is an assumption on my part, I have no evidence to prove this, but the agitation of the sand against the oocysts may even kill them off. So you may see some problems with coccidiosis in a sand-type environment. And it just depends on how well that Spanish sand can especially in an outside run, can hold an appreciable amount of moisture, and that can send the oocyst count up into the stratosphere as well. Whenever you have an opportunity to rotate pens and rotate pasture, I would take that opportunity to do so. I would also take a look at taking the hydrated lime, and we've talked about this before, and changing the pH of the soil. A couple of things come to mind about using the hydrated lime, and that would be to make sure that you wash it in, if at all possible. If you can't wash it in, you need to make sure you till it in. And you don't need to go deep. You're not plowing like you're going to turn a field over and plant corn or soybeans in it. You're going to take that top level anywhere between the top 1 to 3 inches, certainly no deeper than 4 inches. I don't think I'd go 4 inches. I'd probably look to just take the top and turn it over with the... And the amount of hydrated lime you want to put on there is just enough to lightly cover the surface, should be sufficient, and then water that down. The water helps to activate the lime. okay, and make it work. And it has a tendency to be more caustic, especially when it gets wet, and so you're going to not want to let the birds stand directly on it. So I would work it into the soil however I could. If you don't have a tiller, whatever way you see fit to get it into that upper layer of soil. That'll help keep the oocyst count down and help prevent this runaway coccidiosis, because we see it from time to time, and it seems to be becoming more and more prevalent. And I thought this would be an ideal time to mention it.
Do me a favor one more time, if you'll explain. It didn't take you long to do it. If you'll explain one more time how excess sand, brooder coop run, may increase the chances of coccidiosis. I'm jotting this down. If you can explain that to me again.
Yeah, and that would be it's abrasive. Okay, and all you have to do is take the sand and run your hand down through it 2, 3, 4 times, and you can start to feel that your hands get chafed and checked from the sand. So that working against the oocysts, which are relatively fragile, they don't like high heat. Hence the fact that if they were on an eggshell and you put them in an incubator, once it gets up to temperature for a short period of time, they're going to die on the outside of the shell, whether you wash them or you didn't. So, it's my thinking that the sand would destroy them as well. And like I said, I don't have any scientific evidence. It's just common sense. They are not totally indestructible. And just the birds walking back and forth on the sand. I'm not a big fan of sand. I don't, that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there are a lot of people who would probably argue the point, and it's not an argumentative point. It's a personal preference. I don't like straw, hay, those kinds of things. They're not appropriate at all. They don't absorb moisture. They mold very easily. And many times when you get them, they're moldy. I'm watching them here where I live cut some wheat and stuff, and stuff laid out there on the straw that they were going to bale. They never got around to it, and we had a two-day off and on thunderstorm, and that stuff laid there, and then they come around and baled it. I don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stored it in a semi-trailer and closed the door on it, and that heats it all up. That's wonderful. But it doesn't absorb any moisture. A lot of things that people do and I fully understand this, and so this is not trying to take a pop shot at anybody, but it's all dollar and cents related, and sometimes you have to go the extra mile and spend the extra dollar so that you don't have to do things over again. And those that don't know, I'm sure there are people who would argue the point that they've been using hay and straw for years and never had a problem, and then there are those that use it and have all kinds of problems, and there are those that use these things and wouldn't recognize a problem but jumped up and bit them in the face. So everybody has their own take on things. I'm telling you from my experience, what I've experienced over the years, what I see, what people bring to me as their problems, and I just pass that information on. But I prefer a shaving. Pine shaving seems to work fairly well. We're getting ready here to have chickens here. By Monday of next week, there'll be chickens here. So we're still in the middle of getting all the little odds and ends things done. But finally had the two trees taken down yesterday. Thank God for that. I had two trees on the property here. Just, I don't know where my head was, but it wasn't looking up at the sky. And these are tall pine trees, every bit of 50 foot plus tall, and one of them was just dead as a doornail and not in the right place. And finding somebody to take them down that wouldn't have to mortgage your home to do so. And so I found a guy that came and did it. And it was absolutely amazing. Called me at 3, was here by 4:30. And took down two of these 50-foot trees, cut them all up in small pieces so I can handle them, and he was gone by 6:30. So
awesome.
He didn't get here till 4:30, so that's a less, by the time he got his gear set up and everything else, and it was just amazing to watch the guy work. So,
they are amazing. They definitely are.
Yeah, and we're going to use pine shavings here. We prefer a smaller pine shaving if you can get it. I don't like the big, you know, some of them are, I don't like hardwood chips. They cause a lot of bumblefoot problems, things of that nature. And But I just thought that this would be a good topic to talk about. But it does start in that brooder. The idea of this is to allow the birds to build some immunity to the coccidiosis that is on your premise. Please bear in mind that if you bring in birds from somebody else's place and they were having coccidiosis problems there or even had coccidiosis on their place, if it's not the same species of coccidia that you had, you could have problems too because your birds have no immunity to it whatsoever. And that's one of the reasons why we see what we call a coxie break from somebody who has brought some birds in from somewhere else and, you know, then makes the statement, well, I've never had this before. And therein lies more than likely the reason for it. If they never had it before and they've got it now, they probably brought it in the form of a different species of coccidia that their birds were not immunized to on the program that they were on. And so, you know, this stuff can be devastating. Anybody knows anything about it, seen it, had it, you know it's ugly. You know I'm not telling you that, you know, anything wrong on that for sure. But manage that litter moisture, and I think you'll find that a lot of this stuff will just go away and not be the problem it is. If you need to treat, I would certainly rotate my medications around. Everybody knows from listening to the show, I'm not a fan of Sulmet. I know there are people out there that just love it. It has caused more problems for more folks than you can shake a stick at. And I've recently saw where there's some people are having trouble getting it. I don't know whether that's just a feed store or a place not wanting to sell it because of, you know, sales aren't that great, or it's being taken off the market or whatever. You just never know when these companies consolidate themselves. You just don't know what you're going to end up with as far as product is concerned. I think that's it, Andy, for me, unless you've got something else you want me to expound upon here.
I do. I've got a somebody had sent me a message here regarding a question I thought was very interesting and kind of covers a couple of different things here. She is in the chat room right now. It says, I have a question about probiotics for the Peter Brown.
Okay.
Is it something we should give every day, and where can we buy it in bulk? Is there anything we can do for our weaker chicks? Not sure if you were reading my story from last week, but someone gave us a free bag of pine from his chicken coop shop, and it had pressure treated wood in the dust, and they lost darn near everything. They still have a few birds that actually made it, but they are very weak. What can we do to save them? So I guess a two-part question. One, is probiotics something they should give every day? If so, where can they buy it in bulk? And then two, they got some pine chips, pine shavings from a coop builder that was pressure-treated. Whether that was the case or not, they lost almost all of their chicks. They feel to that. They still have some weak ones. And what can they do to help them? Two-part question,
yeah,
I guess.
Let's go back and look at the probiotic first.
The
probiotic product, as far as I know, we sell it in the largest container. For most people, we sell it in a 1 pound container, so they can, you know, if they want to consider that bulk, they can get it from us there. There's not a market for it in a larger container. We buy it from the manufacturer in bulk and break it down, and you know, I can package it any way I want, but as a matter of fact, I've had some people barking at me that a pound is too much for them, and that may be for some people that have smaller flocks. I've got some pigeon flyers that they love the product, but you know, they want it in and would like to have it in a smaller container. As far as using it every day, early on in the very beginning, I would use it every day. We have a program basically where we suggest it be used for at a higher dose level in the beginning. It's the same thing you would do with an antibiotic, what we call pulse dose. You get a big dose up front to get everything going and get the gut populated, and then you start backing it down less and less every day in the water. And after that, I would probably do it a couple, three times a week. I don't think it needs to be done every day. What needs to be done is to keep the gut healthy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't use antibiotics at all, not even the oil of oregano. So you kind of have to make a choice as to which direction you want to go with that thing, because the oil of oregano is an antibiotic in its own right, even though it's not, you know, an antibiotic that we would think of in that way. It's a natural product that will make, you know, that will take out E. coli and a whole lot of other pathogens. As far as the birds that ingested the material, I don't know what they're using for salt-treated lumber these days. I know years ago it used to be an arsenic-based product, and I think they've gotten away now to using a, and I can't say for sure, I don't have the information, but I think that they were using copper sulfate, or some other mixture of something else in copper sulfate, but I really can't say. I'm pretty sure that the arsenic-based product has been banned pretty much everywhere. But again, I don't know that to be gospel either. As to you know what they can do for the birds that are still there affected, I don't know. And when I say I don't know, I don't have any access to these birds. I don't know if they're eating, drinking. You know, I don't know if they're on death's door. I don't know how much of this stuff they consumed, if any. If there's another situation going on, it's a tough deal. You know, to try to figure that one out, because I can't see, having eaten a small amount of the bedding, you know, depending on what's in it, make quite that much of a difference. But, you know, again, this goes to different types of bedding. Birds will load up on certain things. I've seen birds eat sand until their crop was just loaded with it, and I've seen others that just they're not interested in it. I've seen it both ways, birds that eat pine shavings and so on. So I'm not sure I can fully answer the question as far as what to do for the ones they have now. It would be interesting to find out maybe what they are doing for them presently. I would think that maybe flushing with some Epsom salts might help them in that respect. It has a flushing effect on the intestine, and let me see here. I got it written down here somewhere. Hang on a second.
Okay.
Write this stuff down. They might even try apple cider vinegar, and one of the reasons I say that is because with apple cider vinegar, when birds are ill, especially in the intestine, there'll be some mucus produced in that intestine, and the apple cider vinegar can help strip that away. So adding some apple cider vinegar, you know, to the drinking water, you know, maybe. May be helpful, about a tablespoon or so in a gallon of water, or right around 20 cc's or so. If they want to use a syringe for it, that should work. Molasses can work. Don't remember off the top of my head. I think if you were to take 4 ounces of molasses to about a gallon and a quarter, that would probably give them an opportunity to flush the gut and Epsom salts, a teaspoon and 1 fluid ounce of water would help, and that they might have to give as an individual bird treatment, what you would call a gavage down the throat. But that's the things that I would probably do. Look for things that are going to try to clean out whatever there, and you know, certainly keep the birds hydrated is critical. Keep them eating, it's critical. All of those things play into it.
Okay. Very good. I didn't see any other specific information in the chat room, so hopefully that'll ask answer her question. And, of course, they can contact you, chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. That's chickendr at firststatevetsupply.com. Very
well,
good.
I think some of this, you know, cuts back to what I was saying before. You know, things boil down to dollars and cents, and what looks like a good deal sometimes isn't a good deal. And I know this probably wasn't in an attempt to cut down on. It was somebody, you know, giving a more or less a gift. You have to be careful when things are given to you and you know, ask the appropriate questions all the way around and try to, you know, keep these things from happening, because once they happen, they're so darn catastrophic. You know, it's not, none of this stuff generally ends up being an easy fix. And, you know, certainly it's a lesson learned for everybody, and anybody listening will learn a lesson from it, hopefully, at the same time. But, you know, the proper bedding materials, I have people, believe it or not, that and they swear by it, and that's fine if they want to do it, but they have use horse manure for bedding. And I guess if that's your bag, do it, you know. But I'm not up for that. So each to their own.
Yep, exactly. All righty, awesome episode. I took lots of notes myself. And so you're building this Taj Mahal of a coupe right now, which is probably going to be the coupe of all coupes that are built with all your expertise. And you had mentioned that you're still a fan of just good old pine shavings, sounds like, and the bigger, the smaller ones.
Yeah, the smaller the size, the better. In my opinion, and the reason for that, again, it cuts down on the bumblefoot problems. You know, roosts being too high and bird jumps down. That's why your harder
mm-hmm.
shavings aren't helpful for a couple of reasons. When the bird jumps down on it, stabs him in the foot. I mean, which can happen basically with any shaving. It would happen more so with the hardwood, and the hardwood doesn't
mm-hmm.
absorb any moisture. And here we go again,
mm-hmm.
back to the situation of litter management, you know, trying to keep these things under control. Look, for the person that doesn't have a problem with coccidiosis and never has had, doesn't, you know, none of this applies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can't see somebody who's never had a problem running out and getting a meter. Whatever they're doing, they should just keep doing it. I'm a big fan of that. You know, I've said that many times on this show.
Exactly.
You know, if it's working, don't go changing it around. And I see it on Facebook all the time. All the time. Somebody will say, what are you feeding? And this one says, well, I feed this, I feed that. You know, and I say to myself, well, why don't you just ask yourself, are my birds happy? Are they eating? Are they defecating? Are they drinking? I'm happy. You know, you're getting eggs, what more do you want? You know, and this thing of you know, treating them almost as if they are human, and don't get me wrong about the pet aspect of it. I fully get that more than a lot of people might.
right.
Okay, I'm not saying that. I'm talking about they don't need these treats. I see it time in and time out. Okay, if you want to keep your birds happy, I'll tell you what. You make up some of these frames like I've got out here. And you plant yourself some greens in there that they grow up on it, that they can eat every day. And, you know, there's some stuff going around now about what they call this thing, when pen enrichment, okay? That's a quasi-zoo term for animals that are kept in the zoo, and now they have to have animal enrichment. You know, the bison who has the ball to kick around or headbutt around or whatever, because they do it here at the zoo here, and which is fine. But these are chickens, and they don't need balls and all these other things. You know, they may like, look, if it makes you happy, do it. Don't get me wrong. But I would much rather see a head of cabbage being hung on a string or a small chain just slightly above their heads to keep them working, to keep their attention, something that's healthy for them that way, that kind of enrichment I'm all for. These cold frame deals with the wire on them so that the sprouts can grow through so that they can get at them and they can't tear them up and they're always there. I think it's a good deal. That's great enrichment. There are a number of things you can do. They don't need a handful of treats, no more than a child needs a handful of candy.
Couple of questions in the chat room I want to get to before we call it a day. I'm familiar with this product. I know I met the developer. It's again all natural from the earth. I'm sure you're familiar with it. Sweet PBZ, and it was initially marketed to as a horse stall refresher. And it is basically ground up earth, rock, limes, whatever it is, from the earth, and they put it in it, and they use it, they buy it in 30 or 40 pound bags, and it was marketed to for the horse stall refresher. Since then, I know for a fact that ManaPro is basically using that. They just pour it into small little shaker cans, like you're shaking, I don't know, grated cheese on your spaghetti. They sell it, I believe, at Tractor Supply and other places, and you shake it in the brooder, or shake it in your coop, or what have you. It's basically Sweet PDZ and a relabeled as Coop Refresher, and sold for who knows how much. But a couple of questions from the chat room. If you're familiar with that, would you recommend that? Is there any issues with that? I know it's kind of like quote unquote diatomaceous earth being from the earth and all natural, so if it is in granular form and the chicks pick it up and happen to eat it, it's not going to be supposedly detrimental to them. Now, we've used it in the past. Specifically, we had a chicken tractor that we kept about six of our tiniest little chickens. We had some Saramas and some Silkies, about six or seven in this chicken tractor, and we used it. In fact, Jen was responsible for that upkeep of that particular unit, and we got some Sweet PDZ, and she used, it was two levels, and I guess I want to say it was probably 4 by 5 maybe. And I remember her coming in to the office one day, and she had her whole routine of cleaning it, and she started using it. And it was just a little styrofoam coffee cup full of it that she would sprinkle in the bedding, and she would... I remember her coming into the office one day saying, "Hey, man, that stuff really works. It's the same time that I had to clean for the before, da-da-da-da-da." And it is amazing how it's really helped with moisture and odor and the ammonia, the whole nine yards. So we've had good experience with it. We do not use it on a regular basis. It's just something else we would have to buy. But we have used it in the past. And when we had that one bag, we used it. Jen used it on a regular basis and was very pleased with it. But what say you, Doc, regarding Sweet PDZ?
I have no experience with it. I am familiar with a similar brand that the name escapes me right now because it's been they've been trying to market it to the commercial poultry industry.
Okay, yeah.
And it hasn't taken off in the commercial poultry industry as of yet. It is a combination of diatomaceous earth and some form of clay. The idea, I believe, is to get that absorption of the moisture, and then there's some sort of a mild chemical reaction, I think. Don't hold me to it. I'm not that into this particular product. I have access to it. It does come in like a 50-pound bag or so. I think I have enough things to do without putting it in smaller bags and trying to sell it. A 50-pound bag is probably too much for most people, and you know, that's, you know, ManaPro's got deep pockets. They can afford to have somebody, you know, do it and market it and put it in a small bag like that, which is beneficial to everybody, and certainly the cost goes up. You know, there isn't any question about it. I mean, you know, labor's labor. But I don't see it, you know, if it's applied properly. I don't remember what, I could get it. I've got the information somewhere on my computer. I just have to find it. Matter of fact, tomorrow I'll be at the place one of my distributors over here that sells that stuff. So I could get more information on it. But, no, I think using it according to the directions should be fine. I don't see it, you know, again, going back to the fact that we don't want to dry the litter out so much that we start causing problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at things, again, going back, and I hate to do this, I sound like a broken record, but, you know, if things are working for you, just leave them alone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean,
I was just about to say, follow that up, yep.
I mean, it's easy.
Well, I'm going to talk about that as we wrap up here in a minute. Go ahead, but I was going to say kind of the bottom line here is that because we don't want people freaking out about sand and saying, oh my gosh, are you saying I got to go get a backhoe and scoop out my run and completely redo it and all of that. If you're not having any problems, like I said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That was mentioned in the chat room as well, and you're a firm believer of that for many, many times, but it's just something you might look at if you have that coccidious outbreak or a continual problem is that, hey, what bedding are you using? Oh, I'm using sand. Maybe we need to change that up to try to prevent this problem from happening.
You know, I've seen so many times things get changed around, and then you end up having a problem, and nobody's happy, you know, and everybody's miserable at the end of the day, and the ones that end up suffering, you know, the owner suffers, you know, for the most part financially, and then will suffer, you know, some pain and anguish from it from a mental standpoint, but the bird is the one that ends up taking the brunt of it because they end up dying, and you know, to me. You know, again, coming back to what I said in the beginning of the show when we were talking about the heat-related things, I mentioned at least 14 to 15 solid things that a person could do that are not going to break the bank that can mitigate the circumstances of a hot day. And there is no excuse, in my estimation, that any bird should succumb to heat prostration because somebody didn't take the appropriate actions ahead of time. You know, we purposely talked about it last week, knowing that, you know, summer's here. And, you know, so I mentioned it again today simply because I want people to be aware of what they can do if they weren't listening to the show the last time or whatever. All we can do is do the best we can do. And I wouldn't change anything if it's working. It's just not. It doesn't make good sense to me to do that.
I understand. Very good. Awesome. Well, we thank you for joining us today. And looks like we've got a. Let me see what the calendar looks like. We're kind of squeezing in here into July, and let's see. A week from today is July 1st, and I'm not sure exactly our travel schedule back to the homestead, but I will let you know later in the week based on next Monday's show, but nonetheless, if we don't have a show next Monday, then people can go back and listen to one of your archives.
Yeah, I won't be available next Monday, so...
Okay, so the first we
I've
are...
I've got to make the trip to Michigan to get these chickens, and it's a long ride.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay, no, so that's the first. Okay, I'll make a note of that on my end. That may make the decision on my end easier, especially if we are on the road. So
I think
so
that was our consensus the last time, that it was going to work in okay with what you were doing,
mm-hmm,
that I wasn't going to be available on that Monday. But, you know, I Tuesday probably being a tough day for me here, too, but like Wednesday,
no
Thursday, Friday, I could certainly.
Well, we got
do
the
it,
4th, it's the holiday, so
yeah.
July 4th, so yeah, that's
so,
not a big
just
deal.
Shoot me an email, whatever you want to do from that standpoint, but no, I'm looking forward to making this trip and getting these birds here and getting everything settled in, so.
Yeah,
it's been a long time coming, and we're at that point right now where the carpenter should finish up today or tomorrow. Some of the little odds and ends that have got to be done in there. The ventilation system's all done. Air conditioning's in. Pen's all done. Trees are down. We're cooking with gas.
just remember, when you're bringing the chickens back from Michigan and you have them in the cages strapped to the top of your van, that you're spreading all of that disease to all the cars behind you as the wind flaps through their wings. And you know, if I have an open soda can in my car and the window's down, I could get Campylobacter or something like that from your, just like all the commercial chicken trucks. I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Well, these guys will all be inside, so I mean, I've never done anything like that before. I've moved chickens. I've moved chickens a couple hundred miles on the back of a pickup truck in a snowstorm. I've done that. That was way back. And actually, that was not to belabor the point here, but it was a way back when I was in college, and I was moving my flock. The person who gave me a job bought the birds that I had because I had nothing, no place to put them. And so I load them up in the back of a pickup truck in crates. And back in those days, you know, your pockets were always empty. And I was going up the Quickway in New York, which up Route 17, ran out of gas.
Oh, no.
Had to wait for somebody to come from the farm and with gas can and the whole bit to get started again. So it was kind of funny. And snowing beat the band.
I bet it wasn't funny during the time. You laugh about it now, right? But at the time, it probably wasn't too funny.
Well, no, it wasn't too funny. And not only that, was you know, a new employer and the whole bit, you know. But kind of might have pointed to your management skills. But now we're gonna they'll all be enclosed in the van, and be air conditioned, and we'll just roll down the road as quick as we can get here and get them all settled in. And I think that I'm looking forward to it. I've got a lot of projects that over course of time we're going to be doing, and I'll be picturing, you know, putting up some videos and some pictures and stuff to show people what's going on, what we're doing, and we'll decide what works, what doesn't work, what was good, what wasn't good. We'll give you an idea of what some of the costs and things are. This is a huge project for me. Down the road, I'm going to have another electric meter installed out there. I talked to a guy about it over the weekend, and so I'll be able to see exactly what the costs are there. And then down the road, I'm going to look at a small solar panel system to mitigate that cost and see what that runs, and see how we can get that done and give people an idea.
You need power to make sure that. You got to have power in your coop to make sure that they can watch Animal Planet on the flat screen you're installing.
Actually, I thought they might like River Monsters a lot.
Yeah. Oh my goodness gracious!
But I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the move and getting everything settled in here and finally getting Tammy here on a pretty much permanent basis anyway, and. She'll have to go back every now and then because she still has two children that still live there, and it's going to be fine. It's a lot of effort on everybody's part put into it, and like I said, we'll get you all some pictures here before long, and
please do
see how everybody what they think, and we'll take suggestions from people and things that we might want to change. Somebody's doing something different that's working. I'd like to hear about it. And
sounds like a plan. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, as always, on, if not all, most Mondays here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We welcome Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and visit his online store, firststatevetsupply.com. If they don't have it, you don't need it. And, Peter, I hope you have a wonderful 4th of July week and safe travels to you, and we'll see you back in a couple of weeks, my friend.
Okay, safe travels to you, too, and the family.
All righty. Hey, thank you so much. Take care.
Yeah. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. order your HenSaver aprons today at HenSaver.com. That's HenSaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Alrighty, thank you very much for joining us today, and I do hope to see you on the Chicken Whisperer Tour. I'm just letting you know, I'm not sure about tomorrow's radio show, but just check in on Facebook. I'm pretty sure we'll have one on Wednesday. Pretty sure we'll have one on Thursday. Pretty sure we'll have one on Friday. And of course, Saturday from Asheville, broadcasting live on location from the Asheville Tractor Supply Store as we embark tomorrow on our second quarter Power of the Poultry Tour, sponsored by Tractor Supply. We'll be doing lots of book signings and doing lots of chicken workshops and spreading the chicken love throughout the United States as we've done for many, many years. So we hope to see you and at one of these events coming up. We've got Anderson, South Carolina, Easley, South Carolina, Weaverville, North Carolina, Asheville, North Carolina, and Newton, North Carolina. 5 events in 5 days. Definitely looking forward to it, and we hope to see you there. So follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. And those who are already doing that, tune in and see if there will be a show tomorrow, depending on when we're on the road, when we're going to get to our location, if we can stop en route to do the show, who our guest is, things like that. But Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday looks good. Tomorrow, I think, is the only day that I'm not sure about. So no worries there. But thank you for tuning in. Thanks to the Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor, and all of our great fans listening live and to the archive. Have a great day, everybody. Ha ha.